Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Ken Lamoureux, Executive Director, Strategic Services and Innovation ICT Services, Manitoba. Ken is a longtime, widely acknowledged, top echelon business and technology leader and innovator with a success history that encompasses many senior executive positions. Ken, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. It's my pleasure to be here.
Ken, we can learn from your long history of substantial successes. Can you profile some of your key roles and the valued insights and career lessons that you gained in each of these roles?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say this. I owe much of my success to the extremely strong support I received from a lady at Great West Life. Marion Cooper was a trailblazer for women in IT in Winnipeg. She was the first female officer of Great West Life. This is basically a director-level position. And was, I believe, the first woman to be promoted to vice president at Great West Life. She provided me with many opportunities to grow and take some risks in what I would characterize to be a very risk-averse organization. It was her leadership that gave me the desire and motivation to think and do things outside of the box. The most memorable was the establishment of an InfoPlace storefront organization within the new head office building at 100 Osborne. In this center, my staff not only provided what was typical for an information center of the day, but also designed, built, tested, and sold clone personal computers to in-house clients. These PCs were sold for a small fraction of the cost of a PC at that time. PCs were selling for roughly $15,000 to $16,000 per unit, plus 15% maintenance. Our cost all in was $2,500 per unit. It was fairly innovative and cost-effective for the time. Later on, I was part of the corporate architecture and planning unit at Great West Life. My team completed some groundbreaking work with document image processing and workflow management for the group medical underwriting departments. This R&D effort was the catalyst for future work undertaken by Great West Life. One of the career lessons I learned out of all of this was, okay, what have you done for us lately? The more that is delivered, the greater the expectation. However, this is a very positive outcome. It keeps you wanting to grow and innovate by always pushing boundaries.
You shared a story with me that I found intriguing. Jonathan and his partner won first place in Canada in the MIS category at the Queen's Intercollegiate Business Competition. Please elaborate and provide some background, plus what this meant to you.
Well, both of our boys are enrolled at the Asper School of Management at the University of Manitoba here in Winnipeg. My youngest, Daniel, now in third year, is a very strong competitor in sports, great football player. However, Jonathan, my eldest, is graduating this April and is very competitive in video games and, as it turns out, also in business case competitions. He's been competing for the last couple of years and last year took second place in the MIS category at JDC West, which is Jeux de Commerce, which is the Commerce Games, held at Simon Fraser University. This year, out of 30 universities, the top six were invited to Queen's for what is characterized as the Stanley Cup of case competitions. Jonathan and his partner took first place in the MIS category, first time that University of Manitoba even placed. Needless to say, Mother and I and the MIS profs at the university were pretty proud of the work that they both did.
So again, congratulations. Quite a remarkable achievement.
Thank you.
You know, Ken, you're passionate about service and community involvement, and I know we've talked about this before. Can you share your roles and experiences from your work in this area and how your life is enriched by your involvement?
Well, I met my wife doing volunteer work, actually, for the United Way of Winnipeg back in late 1981. Today, she is the Director of Community Investments for the United Way. Aside from this, the personal satisfaction of doing volunteer work is different for all of us that get involved. One of the most beneficial aspects to one's career is the exposure you get from others from all walks of life, the highly educated to the non-educated, the wealthy to the poor, and everything in between. I believe I learned more through my volunteer work than I did through my paid work. My current volunteer work with the St. Boniface General Hospital was and continues to be the most challenging. As board vice chair, I work on the finance and audit and also executive committees of the board. And then the board itself. Board members include university chancellors, business owners, accountants, lawyers, and many other professionals. One of the most important things a professional can do is to widen their network of colleagues. Volunteer work facilitates this.
You know, you have this remarkable background, and I'm sure you come across sort of different experiences. What three stories can you share that illustrate these experiences, and let's say from your work and your community involvement?
Well, I guess one of the ones that still is very fresh in my mind, even though it goes back many, many years, I was a high school dropout, and I was living on my own at age 17. So as a result, in order to really get ahead, I discovered that if one wanted to do anything with one's life, one needed an education. So I went through 10 years of night school to get an education in things like management, administration, and also computing. And that's what gave me the foundation to make a better life for myself and my family. And this experience gave me the drive to push limits and see success where others might see otherwise. Also, getting involved in entrepreneurial activities while working at Great West Life, which I've already commented on, and learning that you can't let the detractors get you down when your vision is not shared by others, especially when it's not shared by external entities.
Specifically in the technology space, what are your department's priorities for 2008 and for the next 3 years?
Well, actually, we have many strategies in place. One of the first things that we did this year was to for the ICT services area was to actually come up with our own vision and mission statements. Up until then, we basically used the overall Department of Science, Technology, Energy, and Mines vision and mission. So this year, we put in the following. Our vision is to have excellent public service through innovative information systems technology, and our mission is to drive public service value from ICT investments. We also have several guiding principles dealing with people, service, change, and accountabilities. But if you look at the priorities of the department, that is science, technology, energy, and mines, there are three of the five priorities that ICT services deals directly with. The priority two of science, technology, energy, and mines is to drive continuous transformation for improved public services and maximize investments made in ICT by extending ICT assets and services into the broader public sector. So there's many things underway in that area. As an example, I'm just putting the final touches on a new contract with Microsoft that is being made available to the broader public sector in Manitoba. And when I say broader public sector, that's basically all government entities with the exception of the federal government entities. So all of the provincial entities, crown corporations, agencies, municipalities throughout the province will be able to take advantage of our buying power as well as some of our R&D that we'll be doing with Microsoft. The third priority, the second priority that we use, which is the third priority of STEM, is to significantly improve Manitoba's scientific research capacity and create an atmosphere of innovation to drive economic growth. Within this category, I have several things underway within ICT services, and one of them is to try to establish an innovation center, that is a business technology innovation center for the city of Winnipeg and the province of Manitoba. We have discussions going on with many vendors and other organizational entities within government and outside of government, including the private sector, to establish a briefing center and research and development center that will take base technologies from various vendors, be they hardware and or software vendors, and do some research, do some development, do some proof of concept building, and also educate senior executives on what the promise holds for these various technologies. So we're hoping that this will get off the ground sometime within the next couple of years. It's not a small undertaking. It could actually, if it comes to fruition, see the development of a facility of roughly 75,000 square feet. And we're hopeful that we can put this on the University of Manitoba campus and have a very strong tie-in to the vendor community and the public and private sectors in the city. The last priority that we deal with is to drive and support the Climate Change Action Plan and expand on green opportunities for Manitobans. Now, a lot of people will say, well, what is ITC Services doing in that business for? Well, we're not in that business, but we can contribute to the goals of that particular strategy, and the goals are to reduce the carbon footprint that Manitoba makes on this earth. Part of it is through consolidation of our data centers. We're moving from 35 different server rooms or data centers down to four. And with that will come server virtualization, which will see our use of electrical power reduce, even though that doesn't reduce our carbon footprint. What it does do, though, is it provides us with the base infrastructure to do things that will lower our carbon footprint. As an example, we're looking at establishing video conferencing, either peer-to-peer or group-to-group, within the province of Manitoba. Instant messaging through the various Microsoft products that we will be installing over the next 3 to 5 years. So these kinds of technologies that will be housed in these broader data centers will, in fact, reduce the carbon footprint because it will require less travel between offices and between people. So, and there are other things as well that we're doing in terms of recycling of paper and less use of paper, et cetera.
Ken, that's, you know, really fascinating what you're talking about in terms of your initiatives. And I was thinking, can you drill down further in your social network Web 2 initiatives using SharePoint and what this means?
Yeah, one of the things that struck me even before I came to government was how my own sons use technology to communicate, to share information, to obtain information. And when I came into government, I've only been here now roughly 18 months, so I'm still a neophyte. But one of the things that struck me was the lack of use of technology and the struggle some of the younger staff have in trying to do things. And as a result of that, I wanted to, as part of our overall program, put in some capabilities so that they can use technologies that they're comfortable with, that they grew up with, so that they can be more effective in doing their jobs. And so as a result of that and doing some investigative work, we decided that we would install SharePoint 2007 at the enterprise level so that we could provide some foundational components to what I would call social computing. So, for example, in addition to having straight collaboration sites using SharePoint, SharePoint also offers the ability to have something called My Site, which is very much like a Facebook kind of capability. So more and more people are now starting to develop these Facebook sites within the managed environment, in other words, within our protected network, because we were very concerned that if we opened the doors to social computing that you find on the Internet, with that comes a lot of risk associated with losing control of information, especially private information. So with our privacy laws, we have to be very, very careful. But I wanted to provide that within the protected network, which SharePoint is going to give us that ability to do. It's not going to happen overnight. I suspect that we'll see something growing within 3 to 5 years, but it'll allow the younger folks with tools that they're familiar with. And also it will provide our older workers, our more experienced workers, especially the ones who are considering retiring, to use this as a way of putting some of their knowledge into a form that can be shared with others before they retire.
How do you see the technology landscape building in your region as compared to globally in the rest of Canada?
In a few areas, actually. I've already mentioned the carbon footprint reduction through the use of new technologies, but the other one is that we've been challenged by our premier, Gary Doer, to provide substantially more services directly to citizens via the Internet. And we have roughly 11 initiatives in the coming 3 years to accomplish this. The least of which is an e-learning portal, the ability to change name and address, or not name, but change address online, to get your social insurance number at birth in an online way, to other services that today you have to either come in or you have to write letters. So we want to provide the ability for people to come in and come in via the Internet and make those changes themselves.
What are your views on the ways to align IT with business needs, driving business agility, and managing risk through improved governance?
Well, first off, the business has to be involved in all aspects of information technology, decision-making, and service delivery. Proper governance demands that businesses, their representatives, have key decision-making roles and hold key positions on an overall steering committee. Without this, things can get out of control very quickly.
In addition, we need to look at the overall governance structure within government. And I'm happy to say that I did look at that, and what I found was actually quite promising. All major decisions are vetted through not only ICT services from an ICT investment standpoint, but it also ends up going through Treasury Board. And the Secretariat of the Treasury Board looks at the overall needs of government vis-a-vis the policies of government, and they are the final decision makers. So you can think of Treasury Board, if you like, as the final steering committee for ICT decisions. But within that, each of the departments are also putting in place similar structures, governance structures, so that what they put forward reflects their priorities within their program areas, and then it slowly gets rolled up to Treasury Board. So I think we've got a pretty good governance structure in place already. It can be improved. In fact, in some areas we might have too much governance, in other areas we might not have enough governance. And so we're working with the departments to improve this and to really get to a maturity level that is commensurate with what we have in front of us.
You know, there's a lot of news right now, and there's different coalitions being formed. I'm hearing this from government and from the educational marketplace and so forth. And it's this whole concept of a skills gap or a skills shortage. How can we close gap and meet the future skill shortage?
I'm really worried about this, to be honest with you. I think both the public and private sectors need to do more to hire university and college students. If we continue to focus on hiring only experienced staff, where does that leave the new grads coming on stream? I can't think of a better way to discourage our children in getting involved in computer science or MIS from the business schools. If they continue to have trouble finding work in Winnipeg, they will either leave, and then the word gets out, and then less people enroll in these programs, and it further exacerbates the issue around skills. So I think the business community and the governments have a responsibility to our graduates. They need to take these people in, skill them up in terms of the actual skills that they need applied to their businesses, but give them the opportunities to get the experience that they need to move forward.
Again, sort of related to this is the productivity gap in Canada versus other countries and improving the ICT adoption rate. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, both from a private sector and public sector standpoint, I see a need that ICT has to be viewed as an investment in the business and or program areas, not just a cost of doing business. From what I'm seeing, I think there's a strong view in many organizations, including the public and private sectors, where some senior leadership in the business area see IT as a cost center, that they see it as a necessary evil. The more progressive see it as a way to leverage their service capabilities and improve their service capabilities to make them more competitive. And you really can see picture these organizations because those that have a more progressive look that IT is an investment to be made, not a cost to be endured. They're the ones who have the CIO or the senior IT manager sitting at the executive table, helping make corporate decisions. Now, it also puts the onus on the CIO and or senior manager to have more of a business focus than just an IT focus. I think we're a ways away, but it's getting better, not worse.
This is something that you alluded to earlier in one of the questions where I asked about what's happening internally within your departments, and we were also talking about SharePoint and so forth, but you were indicating sort of this young culture and sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect because of the use of technology. So that kind of brings to mind this concept of Gen Y, which is the younger culture, and Gen Y basically being the millennials born post 1980. Mm-hmm. So we hear so much about them and their impact. What does this mean to business?
Well, if we think the changes we've experienced over the past 30 years were significant, better hold on to your hats. I think the current crop, like you called them, the millennials, their expectations are going to be so profound that it's going to set governments and businesses on their ears. The kids today are more comfortable with technology than any other time in our history. I know we can say that about all the generations over the past 50 years or so, but today's young adults have had exposure or direct use of computers since they were born, literally. Hell, my two guys, 20 and 22 years old, had access to a computer since they were walking and had been running their own home networks, both wireless and wired, for the past several years. It's second nature to them, whether they're text messaging or emailing or voicemailing or whatever. It's second nature to them. They communicate via Facebook, face-to-face, YouTube, cell phones. It really doesn't matter to them.
Can you share your views on the top challenges facing business, industry, government, and education in 2008 and beyond?
Well, from where I sit, I think there, first off, the lack of qualified staff, and I talked about that, and I guess I could flippantly say, yeah, the lack of qualified staff, and certainly the lack of qualified staff. But I think we have to start hiring and grooming our young grads. Secondly, I think we need to keep up the investments and the nurturing of the Aboriginal community, or investments in, I should say. What a huge and mostly untapped resource we have, especially in Manitoba and Saskatchewan. The social services agencies, along with the educational institutions, are doing their part. I think the private sector and even the public sector needs to step up a little bit more in terms of employment opportunities, educational opportunities, to bring them in. When you consider that 25% of our population are Aboriginal, I don't think we can say the same thing about the workforce, and that needs to change. And I think technology is an area that can really set the tone on this one. Also, thirdly, the pace of technology upgrading, that needs to be accelerated so that as a province and as a country, we can be more competitive. If you look at business in the U.S., Europe, they see ICT as an investment, not as a cost model. They are doing more interesting things. Now, yes, Canada is a leader with respect to online services to citizens, but you know what? The gap is narrowing every year. So we need to do more to stay ahead. We need to do more in the private sector so that they are also viewed as leaders the same way that governments are in Canada.
What are some additional effective steps, then, to address these challenges?
That's a tough question. I think it needs to be addressed at all levels within the community. Manufacturers, service providers, business, educational institutions, government, and the social services sector, they're now starting to engage collaboratively, but there's still a lot to be done. For example, from a United Way standpoint, today a fair amount of their spend each year is in youth services, bringing up their ability to learn more, to interact more socially, and get more engaged in the community, and this will all help in the long term, but it's going to take a while.
Do you have any added items looking into the future that you want to talk about?
Well, my colleagues here are saying, why would I come out of retirement to go back to work? I guess if you look into the future, retirement is one of the things that I should be looking at, but you know, when I work in this environment, I enjoy it, and I would also challenge other IT people who are, or people with an IT background who are in their 50 or older who are contemplating retirement. I just look at it this way. As long as you're still having fun, stay in the business. Why would you not? Because I think we have a lot to offer the country, and I think we have a lot to offer information technology in Canada. And I see a lot of really good people retiring at far too young an age, and I think they should stick with it as long as they are enjoying what they're doing and they have their health.
Ken, I was sort of indicating this earlier. You have just a simply remarkable background of success, and that gives you deep insights into sort of where the marketplace is and so forth. So can you provide your predictions of the top business and technology trends, what you see as their implications and opportunities?
I'm not sure I'm qualified to talk about technology trends per se, but I think I'm in a pretty good position given that I've tried to stay well connected in terms of the latest uses of technologies. And I'm going to come back to Web 2.0 or social computing kinds of capabilities. I think that will be the major differentiator in services going forward. I think the private sector can do a lot more with those kinds of technologies and services. I definitely know the public sector can. I think that Web 2.0 types of services, technologies, whatever you want to call it, will provide governments with the ability to communicate directly with their citizens and not have to rely on other organizations to tell them what people are thinking. I think we'll find out directly from them. So I think that's going to be the main one, I think, over the next dozen years. Yes, there's going to be a lot of new and exciting technologies that come along. In fact, I was looking at one just the other day that provides home care workers with the ability to be linked with either the police, the fire department, or doctors or hospitals in a real-time way, no matter where they are in the province, through a PDA/camera where they can real-time send pictures back to a doctor, for example, if it's a home care worker and they're visiting somebody to change a dressing. The home care worker can send a picture of that surgical site, especially if there's an infection, and have a doctor give an opinion right away as to whether it's serious or not and how it should be dealt with. So I think there's some really exciting niche technologies coming up that will have a huge impact on crisis avoidance in the healthcare sector, also in the judicial sector. But I think the big one is Web 2.0.
What do you see as your added priorities going into 2008, and what do you hope to accomplish?
Well, from a work standpoint, laying down some of these foundational technologies for Web 2.0, such as SharePoint, instant messaging, and also e-learning. We're looking at products that will allow us to very, very quickly deploy electronic learning for all of our staff in government. This will also help us bring up competency levels, especially when we're learning, we're losing a lot of our long-term employees to retirement. But beyond that, what I hope to accomplish, well, I hope to still be having fun. I have no intent to retire anytime soon. And hopefully I can actually make a difference in the public sector. That's why I decided to come into the public sector from the private sector. And so far, I'm having fun.
I guess you've touched on this already somewhat, but what other things from a personal perspective do you hope to achieve in 2008?
Well, I guess one of the things is decide what I want to do when I grow up, but I think I already said what I meant by that, and that is to really make a difference, both in the public sector and healthcare, and I say healthcare from the sense of my volunteer work with the St. Boniface General Hospital, which is a teaching hospital here in Winnipeg. I sit on the board, and I find that whole area of healthcare and the crisis that healthcare is facing right now to be very fascinating, and I think that there's a contribution that actually a lot of IT people can make from a voluntary standpoint in healthcare by getting involved in various committees and boards and sharing their knowledge with the healthcare people in their quest to use more automation.
What are your personal goals for the next 5 years?
Stay healthy, stay busy, make a difference in the community, make a difference for the younger folks coming on stream, and always looking for new challenges. That's what I'm looking for.
You know, something that I've seen in your background is that you played a fairly significant role within the Canadian Information Processing Society, Canada's Association of IT Professionals. So from that sort of perspective, what role do you see KIPS playing in the broader community, business and industry, government, education, and internationally?
Well, I think KIPS is on the right track right now, especially internationally. I'd like to see KIPS do a better job of getting out into the community more, and I know we're doing a lot here in Manitoba, in Winnipeg, in participating in various social sectors with KIPS, but I think that needs to be ratcheted up a little bit. I think more needs to be done between academia and KIPS, and I think they need to be very vigilant to make sure that they keep themselves front and center. And also, more has to be done to convince ICT professionals out there that they really should look at certification. I think that it demonstrates competency. I think it demonstrates the fact that they're committed as a professional to what they're doing. There's too many IT folks out there who are quite happy to just put in their 7 or 8 hours a day and then go home and not worry about anything else. And that's a shame, actually, because I think IT people generally have a lot to offer. And I think KIPS can help get the IT community more engaged in society itself.
You know, so you're talking about KIPPS and the role that it's going to play, and you also talked about sort of from an international standpoint. And so I sort of want to drill down further into that. There's this sort of UN-founded International Federation of Information Processing, or IFIP, and they have something called the Professional Practice Program, which received full ratification at the World General Assembly in August of last year. And then there was the first implementation meeting held in October, hosted by KIPPS in Montreal. And this looks to be a historical inflection point and speaks to IT as a recognized profession with global standards, a profession-based code of ethics, and widely adopted certification, and really full implementation happening in 2009. Again, from your sort of deep perspective in government and industry and having a sort of a deep sort of passion for the educational side, community and students and so forth, can you comment on the benefits of this global initiative?
Well, I think it's going to help KIPPS in Canada to demonstrate the value of a professional designation. And I'm hoping that it will act as a springboard to get more ICT professionals involved in getting their designations. I also think employers, be it in the private or public sectors, need to do their part in what they too should be supporting as or actually not supporting, but pushing their staff on the benefits of this program. We need to move the complacent majority to see that the benefits of being a professional, you look at plumbers, electricians, and other trades, they recognized years ago the benefits of getting their ticket, as it's called. Well, I think it's time ICT professionals should also be getting their ticket in the form of an ISP designation. I think this will go a long way to improve relationships with the business community. It will demonstrate to the business community that that they do have a body of knowledge that they had to acquire to obtain that. And maybe that's an area that KIPPS needs to focus on in the future, is communicating more with the business side the benefits of their IT people having an ISP rather than just selling it to the IT people.
So when you say ISP, you're talking about the Information Systems Professional Designation, which is produced by KIPPS?
That's correct. It's really important that as a community in industry, that we finally take that next step in maturity of the profession. And you look at doctors, lawyers, chartered accountants, et cetera, they recognized this a long time ago. They've been around a lot longer than we have. But given the pace of the move of business today, I think it's really important that we mature more rapidly as a profession.
So we've had a fairly lengthy discussion on a number of topic areas, and this sometimes I kind of turn it around where I'll either ask you for comments or even looking at it from this point of view. If you were doing an interview, what kind of questions would you ask? And then what would be your answer? So here's this time to kind of, you know, be an open forum. Do you have any additional comments to add or additional questions and answers you want to sort of give to the audience here?
Well, it's an interesting question. I've actually been asked by a lot of folks here where I work, like, why would I come back out of retirement to do this kind of work? And secondarily, why would I come into the public sector? And the answer is really quite simple. When I decided I wanted to come back and work full-time, I wanted to work in an area that was really of interest to me, in an area where we could innovate, that we could look at governance and how we align IT with the business more broadly so that we're taken more seriously by the business side. And this opportunity that I'm in right now is providing some of that for me. And one of the other questions that I've had from other people within here is, what did I think of all of the certifications that are out there? And generally speaking, I believe that the granting organizations need to do a much better job to ensure that experience claims are valid. There are far too many individuals out there with certifications that have virtually no experience in the area they are certified in. Yeah, they passed exams, they've written tests, etc. But when you look at the backgrounds of these people with various certifications, they've never applied it. And I think that the certification should be held back until people can actually prove that they have the experience to go along with those skills.
So that sort of ties into this, I guess, this professional development component ongoing, and it's demonstrated.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Well, Ken, you know, again, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you because you have such a rich history and of success and a deep background and holding many, many senior positions with substantive contributions over a long career. So, again, I appreciate you taking the time to come in and sharing your wisdom and deep insights with the audience. And, you know, we will continue to follow your continuing contributions to business, industry, society, and the profession with keen interest. So thank you again.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.